It is my privilege now to enclose part 21. In paragraph 7, you'll find that one of the secrets of success, one of the methods of organizing victory, one of the accomplishments of the mastermind, is to think big thoughts. In paragraph 8, you'll find that everything which we hold in our consciousness for any length of time becomes impressed upon our subconsciousness, and so becomes a pattern which the creative energy will wave into our life and environment. This is the secret of the wonderful power of prayer. We know that the universe is governed by law, that for every effect there must be a cause, and that the same cause, under the same conditions, will invariably produce the same effect. Consequently, if prayer has ever been answered, it will always be answered, if the proper conditions are complied with. This must necessarily be true, otherwise the universe would be a chaos instead of a cosmos. The answer to prayer is therefore subject to law, and this law is definite, exact, and scientific, just as are the laws governing gravitation and electricity. An understanding of this law takes the foundation of Christianity out of the realm of superstition and credulity, and places it upon the firm rock of scientific understanding. But unfortunately, there are comparatively few persons who know how to pray. They understand that there are laws governing electricity, mathematics, and chemistry, but for some inexplicable reason, it never seems to occur to them that there also are spiritual laws, and that these laws are also definite, scientific, exact, and they operate with immutable precision. So here's part 21. The real secret of power is consciousness of power. The universal mind is unconditional. Therefore, the more conscious we become of our unity with this mind, the less conscious we shall become of conditions and limitations. And as we become emancipated or freed from conditions, we come into a realization of the unconditional that we have become free. As soon as we become conscious of the inexhaustible power in the world within, we begin to draw on this power and apply and develop the greater possibilities which this discernment has realized, because whatever we become conscious of is invariably manifested in the objective world, is brought forth into tangible expression. This is because the infinite mind, which is the source from which all things proceed, is one and indivisible, and each individual is a channel whereby this energy that is eternal is being manifested. Our ability to think is our ability to act upon this universal substance, and what we think is what is created or produced in the objective world. The result of this discovery is nothing less than marvelous, and it means that mind is extraordinary in quality, limitless in quantity, and it contains possibilities without number. To become conscious of this power is to become a live wire. It has the same effect as placing an ordinary wire in contact with a wire that is charged. The universal is the live wire. It carries power sufficient to meet every situation which might arise in the life of every individual. When the individual mind touches the universal mind, it receives all of the power that it requires. This is the world within. All science recognizes the reality of this world, and all power is contingent upon our recognition of this world. The ability to eliminate imperfect conditions depends upon mental action, and mental action depends upon consciousness of power. Therefore, the more conscious we become of our unity with the source of all power, the greater will be our power to control and master every condition. Large ideas have a tendency to eliminate all smaller ideas, so that it is well to hold ideas large enough to counteract and destroy all small or undesirable tendencies. This will remove innumerable petty and annoying obstacles from your path. You also become conscious of a larger world of thought, thereby increasing your mental capacity as well as placing yourself in position to accomplish something of value. This is one of the secrets of success, one of the methods of organizing victory, one of the accomplishments of the mastermind. He thinks big thoughts. The creative energies of mind find no more difficulty in handling large situations than in handling small ones. Mind is just as much present in the infinitely large as in the infinitely small. When we realize these facts concerning mind, we understand how we may bring ourselves any condition by creating the corresponding conditions in our consciousness, because everything which is held for any length of time in the consciousness eventually becomes impressed upon the subconscious, and thus becomes a pattern which the creative energy will wave into the life and environment of the individual. In this way, conditions are produced, and we find that our lives are simply the reflection of our own predominant thoughts, our mental attitude. We see then that the science of correct thinking is the one science, that it includes all other sciences. From this science, we learn that every thought creates an impression on the brain, that these impressions create mental tendencies, and these tendencies create character, ability, and purpose, and that the combined action of character, ability, and purpose determines the experiences with which we shall meet in life. These experiences come to us through the law of attraction. Through the action of this law, we meet in the world without the experiences which corresponds to our world within. The predominant thought or the mental attitude is the magnet, and the law is that like attracts like. Consequently, the mental attitude will invariably attract such conditions as corresponds to its very nature. This mental attitude is our personality and is composed of the thoughts which we have been creating in our own mind. Therefore, if we wish a change in conditions, all that is necessary is to change our thought. This will in turn change our mental attitude, which will in turn change our personality, which will in turn change the persons, things, and conditions, or the experiences with which we meet in life. It is, however, no easy matter to change the mental attitude, but by persistent effort it may be accomplished. The mental attitude is patterned after the mental pictures which have been photographed on the brain. If you don't like the pictures, destroy the negatives and create new pictures. This is the art of visualization. Now, as soon as you've done this, you'll begin to attract new things, and the new things will correspond to the new pictures. To do this, impress on the mind a perfect picture of the desire which you wish to have objectified, and continue to hold the picture in mind until results are obtained. If the desire is one which requires determination, ability, talent, courage, power, or any other spiritual power, these are necessary essentials for your picture. Build them in. They are the vital part of the picture. They're the feeling which combines with thought and creates the irresistible magnetic power which draws the things you require to you. They give your picture life, and life means growth, and as soon as it belongs to grow, the result is practically assured. Do not hesitate to aspire to the highest possible attainments in anything you may undertake, for the mind forces are ever ready to lend themselves to a purposeful will in the effort to crystallize its highest aspirations into acts, accomplishments, and events. An illustration of how these mind forces operate is suggested by the method in which all of our habits are formed. We do a thing, then do it again and again and again, until it becomes easy and perhaps almost automatic. And the same rule applies in breaking any and all bad habits. We stop doing something and then avoid it again and again and again until we're free from it entirely. And if we fail now and then, we should by no means lose hope, for the law is absolute and invincible, and it gives us credit for every effort and every success, even though our efforts and successes are perhaps intermittent. There is no limit to what this law can do for you. Dare to believe in your own idea. Remember that nature is plastic to the ideal. Think of the ideal as an already accomplished fact. The real battle of life is one of ideas. It's being fought out by the few against the many. On the one side is the constructive and creative thought. On the other side, the destructive and negative thought. The creative thought is dominated by an ideal. The passive thought is dominated by appearances. On both sides are men of science, men of letters, and men of affairs. On the creative side are men who spend their time in laboratories or over microscopes and telescopes, side by side with the men who dominate the commercial, political, and scientific world. On the negative side are men who spend their time investigating law and precedent, men who mistake theology for religion, statesmen who mistake might for right, and all the millions who seem to prefer precedence to progress, who are eternally looking backward instead of forward, who see only the world without but know nothing of the world within. In the last analysis, there are but these two classes. All men will have to take their place on one side or the other. They will have to go forward or go back. There is no standing still in a world where all is motion. It is this attempt to stand still that gives sanction and force to arbitrary and unequal codes of law. That we are in a period of transition is evidenced by the unrest which is everywhere apparent. The complaint of humanity is as a roll of heaven's artillery, commencing with low and threatening notes and increasing until the sound is sent from cloud to cloud and the lightning splits the air and the earth. The sentries who patrol the most advanced outpost of the industrial, political, and religious world are calling anxiously to each other. What of the night? The danger and insecurity of the position they occupy and attempt to hold is becoming more apparent every single hour. The dawn of a new era necessarily declares that the existing order of things cannot much longer be. Now, the issue between the old regime and the new, the crux of the social problem, is entirely a question of conviction in the minds of the people as to the nature of the universe. When they realize that the transcendent force of spirit or mind of the cosmos is within each individual, it will be possible to frame laws that shall consider the liberties and rights of the many instead of the privileges of the few. As long as the people regard the cosmic power as a power non-human and alien to humanity, so long will it be comparatively easy for a supposed privileged class to rule by divine right in spite of every protest of social sentiment. The real interest of democracy is therefore to exalt, emancipate, and recognize the divinity of the human spirit, to recognize that all power is from within, that no human being has any more power than any other human being, except such as may willingly be delegated to him. The old regime would have us believe that the law was superior to the lawmakers. Herein is the gist of the social crime of every form of privilege and personal inequality, the institutionalizing of the fatalistic doctrine of divine election. The divine mind is the universal mind. It makes no exceptions. It plays no favorites. It does not act through sheer caprice or from anger, jealousy, or wrath. Neither can it be flattered, cajoled, or moved by sympathy or petition to supply man with some need which he thinks necessary for his happiness or even his existence. The divine mind makes no exceptions in favor of any individual, but when the individual understands and realizes his unity with the universal principle, he will appear to be favored because he will have found the source of all health, all wealth, and all power. For your exercise this week, concentrate on the truth. Try to realize that the truth shall make you free. That is, nothing can permanently stand in the way of your perfect success when you learn to apply the scientifically correct thought methods and principles. Realize that you are externalizing in your environment your inherent soul potencies. Realize that the silence offers an ever-available and almost unlimited opportunity for awakening the highest conception of truth. Try to comprehend that omnipotence itself is absolute silence. All else is change, activity, and limitation. Silent thought concentration is, therefore, the true method of reaching, awakening, and then expressing the wonderful potential power of the world within. Now remember these words from Marden. The possibilities of thought training are infinite, its consequence eternal, and yet few take the pains to direct their thinking into channels that will do them good, but instead leave all to chance.